Today on CityCast Chicago, City Council approves more money to help asylum seekers, how we're celebrating Indie Bookstore Day, and should you start a pest control business in Chicago? Producer Michelle Navarro is here with me to talk about it all. It's Tuesday, April 23rd. I'm Simone Alisea in for Jacoby Cochran, and this is what Chicago's talking about. Good morning, Michelle. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you, Simone?
I am doing okay. Missing our fearless host, Jacoby Cochran, but I suppose we will we'll soldier on.
Yes, we will.
Well, let's talk about what happened at City Council. After punting on some big items from the regular monthly meeting, they met again on Friday and approved some big ticket items. Michelle, let's start with additional funding to help migrants and asylum seekers. How much more will Chicago spend after Friday's vote?
So City Council voted 30-18 to spend an additional $70 million to house and care for migrants who, as we know, were sent to Chicago from the border. That is in addition to the $150 million allocated in this year's budget. The county is also kicking in more money, which is at $70 million. The state is expected to set aside more as part of their budget for the next fiscal year.
So that's a lot of numbers you just threw at us.
Yes.
But the top line here is that, right, the city is planning to spend an additional $70 million on top of what was already budgeted for this year. And I think the reason that we wanted to talk about this is because, number one, when Mayor Johnson first announced that budget in the fall, there were a lot of people who were like, $150 million, there's no way that's going to be enough. There's no way we're gonna take care of all these asylum seekers who have come to Chicago with just $150 million. And in fact, the Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle and Governor J.B. Pritzker, as early as 6 weeks ago, had said, like, hey, we're gonna contribute more from the county and from the state. Chicago, we need you to pitch in an extra $70 million. At the time, Mayor Brandon Johnson was like, no. You know, and sort of the whole concept was like, we think the feds should be paying more for this, but now has reversed course with this additional money. Sort of the argument being that, you know, we're going to need that money if more migrants will come as in the lead up to the Democratic National Convention in August. That is the widespread expectation that the buses, et cetera, will begin to ramp up again.
I mean, at this point, Simone, there's been over 39,000 people who have made their way to Chicago since 2022. And it seems like there's kind of like this pressure to get the money we need before, like you mentioned, the Democratic National Convention. What were people in City Council like? How were the responses in City Council? What was kind of like the feeling as this was being discussed?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of frustration even among people who voted yes for this spending, right? We have already talked about this issue that we have seen in communities in Chicago where people are wondering about, okay, we're spending this money, we're providing these resources for these new arrivals. What about people who have already been here? And we saw aldermen sort of echoing some of those same concerns. So there's sort of that underlying tension that has been ongoing throughout this crisis, right? Pretty much since the beginning. And it's worth noting actually on that front that the city and state are trying to combine their existing systems for providing services to migrants and the systems that provide services to people experiencing homelessness and trying to find some way to marry those things. Now, that's still kind of a long time coming. We're expecting a report at the end of summer on that front. So still a lot of work going on there, but that tension is still underlying. I think on the flip side, or in addition to that, you also have alders who are raising concerns about, you know, approving yet another round of funding when there are issues with the people that Chicago is paying to do this work. The contractors who are providing services at these shelters, I think it was Alderwoman Nicole Lee, who again did vote yes to approve, said something to the effect of, you know, we're paying, you know, Hilton, Ritz-Carlton prices for Super 8 service.
On the same idea of, are we getting the resources that are needed to care for this population, but also, like you mentioned, are they up to par with what a human deserves? I mean, this is coming up from a whole list of investigations and complaints that were kind of coming to the city. I mean, we've had measles outbreaks, we've had other infectious diseases that unfortunately a lot of these people in these shelters didn't really have much protection against. And so it's going to see how this will play out. Like, will they continue to seek those same contractors despite all of the complaints that have come up? Is going to be interesting to continue to look out for.
Yeah, I think the other thing that's important to keep in mind about this, you mentioned that over 39,000 people have come to Chicago since the beginning of this in 2022. But at this point, and I think also too, folks might remember, you know, this winter when there were 14,000, 15,000 in shelters that had been stood up by the city, these temporary shelters. At this point, we're looking at just under 9,000 people in shelters right now. And at least there are discussions happening about the move to, you know, as opposed to emergency shelter, moving to affordable housing. How do we permanently house people? The thing that's hanging over everybody right now is there going to be an uptick this summer as we get closer to the DNC? And if that happens, are we prepared for it? Can we handle it again? Independent Bookstore Day is on Saturday, and 46 of Chicagoland's many indie bookstores are participating in this year's bookstore crawl. Michelle, any bookstores here on your list?
Yes, I definitely want to check out all the open books locations, which is like Open Books West Loop, Open Books Logan Square, Open Books Pilsen. I love going to don't get me wrong, like a cozy little bookstore is fun and I love it, but I really enjoy hitting big warehouses where every specific type of genre of book is just has its own huge section and I can just dive into each one. I could spend hours and it's funny because I'll just spend hours at these bookstores just looking at the books and reading them is my favorite part. So Open Books is on my list. What about you?
There are so many great books on here, or so many great bookstores that I think we've mentioned before, even on this show. 57th Street Books, Pilsen Community Books. I think one I really want to check out, because this is very kind of in my genre, is Bucket of Blood Books and Records, which is in Avondale. So I am reading almost exclusively speculative fiction, fantasy, sci-fi. That is very much in my world. And that is kind of what they specialize in, but also obviously a lot of horror stuff as well, which I also really, I like horror books. I don't like horror movies, but I do like horror books. I think they're really fun.
No, I love horror books too. I'm a big fan. I feel like when I go into a bookstore, the main places, the place that I go straight to are usually nonfiction, creative nonfiction, essays, short stories. I feel like that's always the first place that I like to go to pick stuff up. I was such a library kid. I love picking up books and that was my favorite thing to do was just read was my favorite thing to do. I haven't read as much as an adult. Now that I'm becoming an adult and I'm not forced to read as much, I haven't, but I really want to get back to it. And so for me, going to essays and short stories, it kind of it makes it more feasible for me to pick up a book and actually finish it.
Well, Michelle, maybe you would you the fun thing about this crawl is right, you go to one of these bookstores and then you can get a passport that you can then get stamped throughout the day as you visit different bookstores. I mean, would that be an incentive for you or would it just incentivize you to buy books that you might never read?
So that's the question, because I have books that I've bought maybe the last couple of months that I still haven't read, but I bought them because I know I want to read them. And so I definitely want to participate in this, because even just the idea of just looking for books itself is a process. And it's I have so much fun doing it. And so Whether I read them or not, I think I'm definitely going to do it.
So I am curious, do you have a book you've read recently that you've really liked that you picked up from a local bookstore?
I actually very recently, maybe I would say like in the last 2 months, I went to my Myopic Books in Wicker Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I picked up The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath.
All right, classic.
I've never read it before. I've read about it a lot, but I've never actually read the book. So I was like, it's my chance to finally read it. What about you? What was the last book that you picked up?
The bookstore I frequent probably the most often is Women and Children First Books, which is up here in Andersonville. Classic Andersonville staple. And I think they're really well known for, and you'd probably like it because they're probably, I feel like they're really well known for all their nonfiction essays. And, you know, they have a very educational mindset, but they also have this great collection of speculative fiction by Black and Brown authors and by authors who are women, which I really like. And they have a lot of new stuff, which is really exciting. And probably the best thing recently that I read from there was The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue by V.E. Schwab. If you like romance, if you like stories that include a deal with the devil, if you like time, anything that moves across time, it's really good. It's about a woman, you know, in like 16th century France or something, who makes a deal to live forever, but she is forgotten by everyone who meets her until one day in modern day New York, she meets someone who recognizes her, and, you know, romantic magical shenanigans ensue.
I love romantic magical shenanigans, so yeah. I'm sure it's great.
Well, you should definitely check out the list of bookstores that are participating in this year's crawl. We've got a link in the show notes. And if you want to enjoy any of the books you buy with friends, you might consider joining a book club. We actually have a list of the best Chicago book clubs on our website, chicago.citycast.fm. So we end up with a lot of like weird and esoteric rankings in our inbox. So every once in a while, we like to pull one out and talk about it. This week, I got one from a company called Pestnome, which connects people with resources to get rid of bugs, rats, other pests, etc. And it's about which cities are the best places to start a pest control business. Michelle, where do you think Chicago ranks on this list?
We've heard time again and again that we are the rattiest city or one of the rattiest city. And so that makes me think that we're pretty high up there, along with the fact that mosquitoes are present every year and have been, and I've been personally attacked ever since I could remember by them. I feel like we're up there.
I'm going to ask you to put a number on it. Put a number on it. Where do you think we are? So just to let you know, number one is the best for starting a pest control business. And then it's out of 230-ish cities.
Okay. And then, and see, like, for me, like, that's the two things I can think about. It's like rats and, like, mosquitoes, but...
bed bugs?
There's other... Okay, bed bugs. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. But then I think about, like, other cities on the map that like they just have like maybe warmer weather or their weather kind of allows for other creatures that I can't even think of. So I will have to say, like, are we like five?
That is more optimistic than this ranking is, or pessimistic, depending on how you see pest control businesses. So Chicago, according to this list, Chicago ranks 15, which is still pretty high, again, out of like 230 cities. But not as high as I expected. So we are behind the top cities, Jacksonville, Florida.
That makes sense. See, Florida, like, they have alligators.
I don't know if alligators is included in pest control. It must be, right?
It probably isn't, but I'm like, but if alligators are problems from time to time, I'm sure there's a lot of smaller scale animals that must be, or like insects that must be.
Apparently, they have 28 common pest species, according to Pest.
There you go.
We are also behind, and we're also, so several other sort of, I think, similar-ish cities like Houston, Dallas, Tampa, Raleigh. Also, we're behind New York, which I think also makes sense.
They got the roaches. They got the...
They have the rats, those rats. But Chicago is number 15, you know, apparently.
That makes me feel better.
I think that also makes me feel better. I will say, so like our demand is relatively high. We're number 15 in terms of like the demand for pest control, but like we're in the hundreds for earning potential, training, statewide requirements. Yeah. So it's like, we're only good because we have so many pests and there's such a high demand, which is maybe...
Never mind. I don't feel that good about it. I was going to list off all the Chicago pests. So like there's ants, which every summer...
Ants.
If you leave something sweet, they will be all over your place. Of course, rodents, wasps, centipedes.
No,
centipedes are my worst.
I cannot. I absolutely cannot. They are so... oogie, and the way they move, I can't. Nope. No. No.
I'm not like a, like if I see a spider or even if I see a rat, I won't freak out. But if I see a centipede, like that's the thing where I will scream a very girlish scream.
I think centipedes are probably the only thing that could appear in my apartment that I would be like, can someone else please deal with this?
Yeah, I'm not the same.
I'm not strong enough to deal with this.
I have like the goosebumps just talking about it. I just like their legs and just like they're so long and they have those little weird antennas and it's just...
I don't like it. I don't like it.
Okay, but yeah. So other than centipedes, so we have ants, rodents, wasps, centipedes, fleas.
Oh, okay. Sure.
Clover mites, termites, bedbugs, mosquitoes, spiders, flies, the carpenter ant.
Oh, those silver are brush. Silverfish. I also do not like silverfish.
Silver, because they give centipede vibes. Earwigs. And then roaches, ticks, beetles, crickets.
Crickets?
And then...
Are crickets a pest? Maybe they do something to gardens? I don't know. I like crickets. Crickets are cute. It's wild, just the... how quickly I swung on those two different bugs just now.
Yeah, just hating centipedes, but then you like crickets. Oh, they will eat. This is according to chemwise.com. They said crickets are a nuisance for two main reasons. They're chirping, not us using noise complaints against crickets.
Oh my God.
Okay, but the damage it causes to your personal items. Crickets will often eat fabric, which damages clothing and furniture. I did not know that.
Who knew? I thought that was
reading is essential. Which is why you should check out the bookstore.
The bookstores and the libraries this weekend.
Maybe you'll learn something new.
Maybe you'll find a pest book, and you can tell us what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Michelle, thanks so much for hanging out with me today.
Thanks for having me.
And some good news before I let you go. Jacoby is going to be back tomorrow. And that, I think, is good news for all of us. Thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you then. All right, so we end up with a lot. So many pickups in this episode. All right.